Welcome to the long-awaited new edition of An Artifactual Journey.
Like, we literally haven't recorded an episode since February, so...
Was that Black History Month? But every month is Black History Month, right?
Exactly,
so. Okay, so big apologies to our faithful listeners around the world.
Cough, cough, Dr. Freeman.
FYI, we're in the process of writing new books, cataloging the vast inventory in the Nanny Jack and Company archives, pitching TV concepts, working on tours, working on 3D augmented reality. So when you don't hear from us, it's not because we're just twiddling our thumbs.
And we're not just sitting on like some vacation beach somewhere in like the middle of who knows where.
And if I was, I sure enough would not be talking to any of you. Okay, so let's get busy. Okay, so on a serious tip, we are delighted to be back, and I think we have a really clever podcast to share with you today, and we're going to start right now. On the morning of May 24th, 1947, Villard Patio, one of Black New Orleans' most popular and influential photographers, leaped over a railing and into the swirling tides of history.
For a reason known only to him, the man who snapped the iconic portrait of the Secret Nine, Louis Armstrong, yes, the Louis Armstrong.
Satchmo!
Early 1930s semi-pro baseball team brought his story and his life to a close. So we're going to start, as we usually do, at the end and work our way to the beginning.
So over the last 30 years, yours truly has been trying to acquire any type of photographs coming from this very important Black photographer from the Big Easy, the Crescent City.
Patio is largely known for his photographs of none other than Louis Armstrong, but he, of course, also photographed many families in New Orleans, including the Black and upper middle class Creole residents in New Orleans.
Really, I give a hat tip, as I always like to my colleague and friend, Dr. Deborah Willis, who many, many years ago put out a wonderful book on Black photographers. And I used to carry this book around in my backpack back in the day as I was treasure hunting around the country for these rare Black images. So again, hat tip to Dr. Deb Willis for her brilliance as a photographer, historian, and professor, and author, and friend. So over the last 30 years, yes, we have James Van Der Zee, we have Addison Scurlock, we have Arthur L. Macbeth, we have Alex Cole, we have E. Victor Wright, Paul Henderson, but the one that has been elusive is none other than
Mr. Villard Patio himself.
So within the last month, the treasure hunting gods have smiled upon me and allowed me to find a very rare, magnificent, hand-colored portrait of a well-dressed little boy signed by none other than Patio from NOLA.
And like many Black photographers in urban areas and rural areas in significant Black pockets across the country, Patio helped to document the face of Black New Orleans. Although he wasn't the only Black photographer in New Orleans, he was one of the most prominent and one of the most successful and one of the most skilled at what he did, so much so that Satchmo constantly came back to use him to photograph him, to photograph his baseball team, to photograph his daily activities whenever he came back to the Big Easy. So let's dive a little bit into Villard Patio's life, where he came from, who he was, his family, and how he came to become a very prominent photographer, and unfortunately how he came to his very murky kind of ending.
So since you said dive, I'm just curious, can you swim?
I'm plead the fifth.
Well, that you're going to plead the fifth, like Donald Trump just did today. What's today? Today's date is Wednesday.
Wednesday, August the 10th.
So you're pleading the fifth like Donald Trump, right? Okay. So back to being serious. What I think is really intriguing about Patio is that I've been to New Orleans on two different occasions. Both times I went treasure hunting, and both times came up empty-handed. I went to Treme. I went to different historic cemeteries, you know, to different antique shops, looking around, trying to find any evidence of the three leading pioneering Black photographers of New Orleans.
And they are?
One comes to mind is Florestine Perrault. That would be P-E-R-R-A-U-L-T. And another one would be my main man, Arthur P. Bedeau, B-E-D-O-U. And then obviously we have Villard Patio. So you see a triumvirate of critically acclaimed photographers in New Orleans that battled the racism of Jim Crow, the issue within the community of being Creole. Obviously, that's going to be the color spectrum. And with Florestine, it's the gender because she is a woman. So Patio is really connected at the hip to these two other critically acclaimed black photographers whose work is also extremely difficult to find in the public space. I'm not talking about in particular archives, institutions, or museums, but I'm talking about for present and future collectors that are trying to get their hands on some of this significant work.
And it's interesting you mentioned that they were connected at the hip, because if you look at black photographers across the country, not just New Orleans, but Baltimore, Chicago, Texas, California, Florida, you often see where a black photographer apprentices, sometimes with a white photographer, or in most some cases with a black photographer. You might see their name listed with the other photographer, or in some cases they are colorists, they're an apprentice, they are learning their trade before they then blast off to become independent, operating their own studio.
And to go a little bit deeper, one thing that is fascinating in many urban centers, if you look at where the historic white photography stands were, at some point you can often see that that's the exact same location as times change and demographics change, where a black photographer would operate. So you can actually have in your archives, as we do at Nanny Jack and Company, some images when the location was owned and operated by a white photographer, but then you see that a photographer of African descent has moved in. So yes, we purchased those because it was part of a larger story, even though they were not African American at the time. While my trusted sidekick is flipping through, I just want to say that one fascinating part of telling our own story is through the lens of these African American photographers. They are literally everywhere across the country, and some of them have yet to get their just due because they have not been properly collected, researched, and then shared. So do not fret because you hear so much about Richmond with the Brown family, or you hear in New Bedford, Mass. About Headley and Reed, or you hear about Daniel Freeman in the District of Columbia. There are countless other very impactful black photographers of both genders, male and female, that we need to do much more scholarship, documentation, and retrospectives on their legacy.
Okay, so just a little bit of background. That was a great point, actually. Thank you.
Thank you.
So just a little bit of background about Villard Patio's life. According to his World War I draft card, he was born in the Lafayette parish town of Scott, Louisiana, and his birthday deviates. One record says 1883, another says 1892. And just a side note, for anyone who does any type of African-American historical research, or even just anything that's non-white, you often see where the birth dates deviate drastically. So you can have anywhere from a difference of 1 year to, in this case, a difference of 9 years, because often the census taker didn't really care to record age properly, or the person just didn't know. So they made up, you know, a year in which they thought they were born because it's how old they were told they were.
The other part, if I could jump in, is that do not be alarmed if the race is not correct. The person may be listed as white, but in reality, they're mulatto, or in reality, you know, because they're your family members or relatives, neighbors, that they were indeed of African descent.
And that's a perfect segue, because Patio's family, his mother, father, grandparents, and he himself and his siblings were often listed as white in several census records, or mulatto, which is a mixture of Caucasian and African American and other ethnicities, because they were very, very light-skinned and possibly could pass. So to a census taker who didn't know any better, they appeared to be white.
For our listeners that don't know, when you say possibly pass, are they passing a test? Are they passing on the speedway? What in the world are you talking about?
For white. When someone is light skinned, so much so that they look Caucasian, they could often live their life as if they were a Caucasian person, even if they were mixed race, if they had some Caucasian, French, English ancestry in them, light enough to actually pretend to be Caucasian.
Okay, thank you for that.
So it looks like Patio's family actually originated after the Civil War in Lafayette Parish, Louisiana. And we were able to actually go back to his grandfather, Charles Patio. Charles Patio owned his own farm and actually worked as a planter in a nearby village. And I'm going to probably get this wrong. I'm going to try it anyways. Vermilionville. I'm sorry if I skewered that up for anybody who lives in Vermilionville. Charles appears to have been born.
Time out. So you can't even enunciate it, yet alone spell it, right?
Right.
Okay. All right. It's all good.
His grandfather Charles appears to have been born in 1813 and married to a woman named Mary Louise Senegal, who was born about 1830. And as far as we're concerned, for anyone who is curious, we believe they were both freeborn. There is no mention of Charles's grandparents being born enslaved, and we just know that by the end of the Civil War, he owned his own farm. Stop right here to say full disclaimer. If you hear like some random strange noise in the background.
Cooing, whining, crying,
screaming. What kind of sounds like a mixture of several different languages. That's Isabella. So say hi, Isabella. Of course, now she's microphone shy. Isabella's a 21 month old daughter who has quite a voice and wants you to hear it, even when you might not want to hear it. Villard Patio's grandfather had a son named Telephos, and of course that's Villard's father, Telephose, who married a Laura Bach. And according to the 1910 census, they had five living children, one of whom, of course, was Villard Patio. And they lived actually in several different, very historic black pockets within the New Orleans area, including
Tremé, which the film, HBO series. Okay. Come on.
Tremé, which of course was not only known for its jazz music, but known for its heavy, rich black culture. You had literature that came out of there, you had photography, a vast variety of things came out of the Tremé area. And they also lived in an area, and I'm going to skewer this one too, Mermentau, which is in the more familiar sounding Acadia, I think, parish. Extremely small community, but also with some rich, deep black history of the area.
Let me jump in and say that the Patio story is an unsolved mystery. Over the years, police records, water records of the waterways, all kinds of deep research by various people have been done and unsuccessful in recovering his body after him jumping into the water in 1947.
And of course, the reason he did it still remains unknown. According to his wife, he had been ill for several weeks and had actually received treatment at the now defunct Flint Goodrich Hospital that was associated with New Orleans University for an undisclosed illness. And so whether he leaped to his death because of his illness remains to be seen. And I should put a note in that Flint Goodrich is actually an African-American training school for nurses. We have a rare diploma in the Nanny Jack Company archives from 1930, several years before Villard Patio ultimately took his life. But this would have been the hospital that he received some medical service from that ultimately led to him leaping to his death.
And in addition, it would make sense that Villard would have captured images of some of the people, the doctors and nurses and actually patients that were and students that were connected to this once critically acclaimed African-American hospital and institution of higher learning.
Because many of them lived in the communities that he was photographing in, and several of the addresses that he photographed from included the Tremé area, where prominent black doctors, nurses, business professionals, photographers like Patio himself and entertainers lived.
And I have one last piece to add as I'm looking through my notes. His legacy is ripe for new research, new images to surface like the one that we're going to share with the public, that we were so blessed by divine order and the treasure hunting gods to allow us to acquire. And one of his most famous pieces of work comes out in 1926, and it is known as the Crescent City Pictorial. It's a souvenir booklet, a 28-page souvenir booklet that was published in 1926 by O.C. W. Taylor, co-founder and first editor of the Louisiana Weekly newspaper. Now, if you get your hands on one of those, you are blessed.
Give us a call.
No, don't give us a call. Donate to our archive. So at the end of the day, put your treasure hunting gloves on, open up your wallet, and start going out across the country trying to uncover examples of Villard Patio's magnificent work that documented the significant communities within the Louisiana environment. So that concludes another edition of An Artifact Your Journey. I'm your host, Philip J. Merrill, along with...
And I'm Veronica Carr.
And who are you?
Oh, that's a good question. Who am I? I'm digital media strategist for Nanny Jack and Company. I also edit this podcast and produce it as well.
And
you run our social media accounts.
And you're the mama to Queen Isabella, right?
Most important jobs.
Okay. That's a wrap. See you next time.